Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. We started out right. We've been off a couple weeks, archived, vacations, whatever. But we kick it right now with the Keystone Turnpike Combo Twosome. Yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. My sidekick, Matthew DiBiase in Philadelphia. 347-205-9631. You can catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms powered by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, Matt, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? Third of all, it's nice to be back with the listeners.
Yeah, it's great. After a two-week hiatus where I was vacationing in North Carolina, cruising the Blue Ridge Parkway there, it's great to be back and great to be talking about. We're going to be talking about NBA tonight. Lots of action today in the NBA. We're going to talk about NHL playoffs. We might even talk about a little bit of baseball and all that. But boy, man, the NBA round one finished up with Dallas falling to the Los Angeles Clippers, and round two started off last night and tonight with the Sixers losing in a very stunning fashion to the Atlanta Hawks. And then the Brooklyn Nets beating Milwaukee in Game 1 last night in a very gritty and tough contest here. I'll tell you, I mean, the NBA playoffs, man, it's really forming up here. Okay, the Lakers went down, man. I mean, Phoenix took the Lakers in six. Denver beat the Portland Trail Blazers, and it also cost Terry Stotts his job after nine playoff failures. They finally decided they had enough. Portland Trail Blazers had enough of his heartbreak coaching, and they gave him the can. And they're meanwhile searching for a new coach. And first, Damian Lillard asked for Jason Kidd to be their new head coach, but Jason Kidd has now publicly stated he's not in the running for it. Utah took down Memphis, and they're going to take on the Clippers, in a couple of days here. And the Sixers, after a one-game hiccup, managed to beat the Wizards, and they just lost to Atlanta. I'll tell you, I caught the tail end there when they were rallying, and basically the Sixers were turnover prone, especially in that second period, in that second quarter. They just made too many mistakes and allowed Atlanta to rack up the points. Bogdanovich, was sinking threes. Trae Young was playing up to his potential there. If they go further, I think Trae Young will probably be Atlanta's MVP if they go that far. Brooklyn beat the Milwaukee Bucks last night, even though they didn't have James Harden, who will not play Game 2 tomorrow night. He's out with a hamstring injury. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving defied all expectations, and they executed perfectly together, and they played some gritty, tough defense, and Michael James coming off the bench for Brooklyn really supplied some extra offense there. So, Mark, I know you're skeptical about the Nets. You keep telling us they're a super glue team. But you know something? I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm calling the Nets going to take this series. I think tomorrow night's going to be a big one. And I think when they play their first game in Milwaukee, if they take one of those games, either the three or the four, I'm going with Brooklyn here. Brooklyn, you got to give credit to Nash. I think as a coach, in defiance of all expectations, he is getting these guys to perform. He's getting them to perform, at the right time. I mean, you would figure with Kyrie Irving's ego and all that, things would fall apart, but it hasn't fallen apart. And even with the injury to James Harden, they have not collapsed. And somehow he's keeping those guys together, and that's why I'm calling for Brooklyn to take the series against Milwaukee. And I think if Milwaukee goes down in defeat, I think Mike Budenholzer gets canned. Who knows? Maybe he'll get the Portland Trail Blazers job, as it were. Now, in the Sixers sense, I'm glad that Joel Embiid came back and played there. I mean, he performed brilliantly. I mean, he scored a playoff best of 39 points in the game. But what the Sixers need to do now is, okay, they got their bad – hopefully they get this bad game out of their system. What they need to do now is take the next four games, because you do not want to let the Atlanta Hawks to get brave. You don't want them to get confidence. You don't want them to get their courage up and do to them what they did to the New York Knicks, defy all expectations and, beat a favorite team, in the playoffs there. I mean – I think it's imperative. I mean, this is a character test for the Sixers. I mean, they got their big gun back, but what they need to do now is stop making those mistakes. I mean, they committed so many turnovers in that first half of the game. That's what set up, you know, the Atlanta victory. But now they got to tighten it up. They got to square it up, tighten it up, and, you know, and just, you know, they got the offense. They can execute on the offense, but they just got to work on their defense, of, you know, stop the turnovers, you know, and figure out a way to deny the basket to Bojan Bogdanovic and also Trae Young. I mean, that's the challenge in my view. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, the NBA's changed since I've started watching it years back. I'll be 60 in November, and when I look at this league now, you know, the guys are getting called for the ticky-tacks. The referees won't let them play the game. If the NBA had their way, they probably would have wanted the Lakers and the Nets for the NBA final, and that would have been a bonanza for TV viewership across the country. So now they're going to settle with, and I called it last year thinking the Clippers and Bucks were going to get there. I'm going to call the Clippers and Bucks again, like I said, to start this year, you know, and I'm going to stick with it. But maybe the NBA doesn't want that. Maybe they want the Clippers and, you know, Nets. And the problem I have with the Nets is, and I get called out on the XM series show, the Cammy T show, this show, every show, you know, and I'll break it down like this. As far as I'll stay consistent with this, I've never been a Kyrie Irving guy, and the reason I've never been a Kyrie Irving guy, I think he's a cancer in the locker room. I think he was in Cleveland by, you know, going back and forth with LeBron James. I think the thing in Boston was a scenario there, and I think now with the elevation of Brad Stevens in Boston, I think you got to get rid of everybody there, build around Jason Tatum, and move forward. Because I know there was a lot of remarks made about that city and vice versa and comments and stuff. But I think when you look at Kyrie Irving and the Brooklyn Nets, I look at this team as a, you know, a WWE tour. They come into town, they piss off everybody's city, and they don't care. And I think the real reason when you look at this team is, you know, let's face it, this injury that Harden has, I think it's a mirage. I think he's done for the series. I mean, we've seen guys get kind of like this injury, and, you're out for 2-3 weeks. So if this guy comes back, he's going to be hobbling or he's going to get re-injured, kind of like Anthony Davis did with the Lakers. He couldn't come back from the groin injury. So now you're regulated to two guys, Durant and Irving. I don't know if you can count on Irving. Blake Griffin, you know, covered him for a lot of years with the Clippers. He's a great guy. He had a great game yesterday. And I think he's your number two option if the inconsistencies of what you're going to get with Kyrie Irving. We don't even know if he's going to be around to actually play tomorrow. Maybe he'll decide to take the night off. Who knows? But it's the playoffs, so my money's on he'll probably be there. I still like Milwaukee in six games, Matt. I really do. I think Milwaukee set something there in this game. If they can crash the boards, control that, the tempo, get those guards and Holiday look good and stuff, I like them. You know, you split in Brooklyn, you bring them home, and then you roll the dice. Brooklyn hasn't won in Milwaukee this year, so, you know, it was a back-to-back in regular season. Milwaukee took them out, so I like my chances. We win tomorrow in Brooklyn, we move on. As far as Philadelphia and Atlanta, I think Atlanta's a smoke and mirrors team. A lot of people tell me they're one player away from, you know, vying for a championship. This team I haven't taken serious since Mike Woodson coached them and kept them in a competitive balance. So I'm not saying, you know, that they can't do nothing, but I think Philly took them and underestimated them today. They'll bounce back, and I like Philly in six games in this. I'm going to stick with my prediction. It's a Philly-Milwaukee Eastern for its final.
Yeah. One thing about Nate McMillan, the head coach of the Atlanta Hawks, is this is a significant thing. Right now, he's tied for sixth place with Mike D'Antoni in the heartbreak coaching ranks, you know, with 10 playoff appearances. I mean, if he fails this year, it'll be his 10th playoff appearance without ranking the finals. And here's the thing to consider. At no time has he ever gone beyond the second round in the playoffs. All of his defeats right. are in the first or the second round. So that's a little thing against him right there and all of that. I mean, like Stotts was the same way. Stotts never made it to the conference finals. All of his playoff defeats were in the first and second rounds there. You mentioned Anthony Davis earlier. I want to ask you something because this was what I was thinking when I was watching on vacation there. I mean, I saw him try to play that game where they went down in defeat against Phoenix. He played for a little bit, then he was hobbling off, crying in pain and all that. You think he wimped out? Do you think Anthony Davis wimped out at while that series and out of that game, in your opinion? Yes,
well,
or no?
A lot of people, you know, question, you know, his integrity and drive and all this. I like him. He's a big man. He's very competitive. I think that injury sidelined him. He tried to give it a go. If the Lakers were up 3-2 in that series, let's face it, the State Farm boys would have been going back to the desert. But, yeah. You know, they didn't. He came out. He played, you know, about 5 minutes. Couldn't really do anything with it, and it was on LeBron. Now, LeBron's been catching a lot of flack out here and across the country by walking off the court. But if you remember, LeBron did the same thing at the Boston Garden. I'm looking at LeBron, and you know, and I take the heat on this one too, as far as the fact I think it's when you look at guys like LeBron, when you look at guys like Brady, guys that set the bar extremely high for themselves, it's just pure frustration. Now you're left out there with guys like Tucker and Kuzma and all these guys that can't seem to hit shots. Somebody, kidnapped Dennis Schroeder there. Harold didn't play, pretty much. Drummond didn't play. Vogel didn't know how to coach. So there's a lot of things here, and I think LeBron just had to say to himself, you listen, I want to get back to the locker room. Just want to sit by my locker and, you know, digress a little here. And there's nothing wrong with that. He'll be back. This Laker team will be back. I think when you look at this team next year moving forward, Lowry will be here, Beal. They'll have to, you know, try to re-sign Drummond. I would re-sign him. And then just communicate. I think communication's big with this team. The other team that shares that arena with them, the Clippers, keep your eyes on. What they did today against Dallas shows me in 1995 what UCLA did against Missouri. They hit that shot. Tyus Edney hit that shot, catapulted them the rest of the way. I think now the Clippers will go right through Utah, and whoever wins Denver-Phoenix, which I think maybe Phoenix might take it, who knows, then they'll steamroll through that. So keep your eyes. Clippers got veteran leadership. They got guys that can step up, and they got go-to guys there. So they can wear your bench out in a hurry. I like the Clippers to come out of the West, and I said that all along.
I like to end up with the Clippers, too, because don't laugh. When I was watching that Game 6 where they were taking on Dallas, at Dallas, Dallas had a lead going after the end of three periods there. And then all of a sudden, in that fourth period, and I was watching that game, they couldn't hit a shot. They were trying for a three-point. Penny Hardaway Jr. would try for a three-pointer.
Right.
It would go off the rim. One of the other, Luka Doncic, who was the MVP, I mean, all that. All of a sudden, he couldn't buy a shot. Nothing was going in. And they basically allowed the Clippers to come back and take that Game 6. And I said to myself, if they let the Clippers win that Game 6, Dallas will definitely not win Game 7. And for the most part of that Game 7, they were falling behind. They did have a slim lead at the end of three, but then, hey, the Clippers just came back and dominated that fourth quarter.
Well, not only that, Matt, when you look at this, you're not going to win in the NBA. Dallas is a mirror image of Atlanta. Everything revolves around Trae Young, just like in Dallas. Everything revolves around Luka Doncic. So you're not going to win in the NBA with one guy. You need two guys at least to catapult you to the NBA title. We see that with the Clippers now, with George and Leonard, and then they have a nice supporting cast. Reggie Jackson's over there. You bring in leadership with Rondo. The Morris boys, you know, I was blessed enough to know them before they even came in the league. And, I mean, those guys are really coming to their own. They're well-liked. There's a lot of, you know, mixed in with, you know, Terrence Mann. And Ty Lue's a good, you know, a nice guy. His neck was on the line here when they fell behind, but now they're rallied around. They picked up the two games. They go to Utah. I just think there's no stopping this Clipper train moving forward. I think they know what's at stake. Their whole idea is to get to the third round. They've never been to the Western Conference Final. I think when they get there, they're not going to be content. And I think, you know, when you look at it, it's going to be them in Milwaukee for the NBA championship, and that's going to be one hell of a series.
I'll tell you this. The thing is, before I was thinking Clippers all the way for the Western Conference title at least, but when the fact that they allowed Dallas to extend them to seven games like that, that kind of really shook me a little bit. So right now, my initial inclination, if you had asked me this a month ago, I would have said Clippers all the in five over Utah, but now I'm getting to be a little bit skeptical about the Clippers. I think Utah will give them a very stern test. I think if the Clippers can break serve at Utah in games one, in the one or the two, then I think that then I think your prediction will become more accurate. But I think Utah is going to give a sterner test here. If I'm going to go with Utah, it's going to be shaky. But I to tell you this, I'll go with Utah in the second round. But if the Clippers beat Utah, then yeah, they will definitely take the Western Conference title. They will beat whoever, you know, the Phoenix-Denver series. They will take them, and they will represent the Western Conference in the NBA Finals, either against the Sixers or against the Brooklyn Nets or the Milwaukee Bucks, in my view. But right now, I'm just a tad little bit skeptical about the Clippers right now because they should never have allowed Dallas to take them to seven. They should have nailed
well,
them.
Well, in Utah, let's face it, Utah dodged a bullet too. They should have played Golden State. I think Golden State would have gave Utah a more sterner test. Memphis came in. They were riding a little high there. They didn't show me nothing. They got John Morant.
Yeah.
That's about it. But I think now you're gonna start to see, and you know, guys like Mitchell and Gobert are going to have to step up here. But I just think there's so much more depth on the Clipper bench that the Jazz are going to have a heck of a time trying to compete with that because, let's face it, you know, the second team coming off that bench for the Clippers could start in most, arenas. So
I
like the Clippers' chances. And if you get in foul problems, now you're bringing guys that might not be used to picking up extra minutes. You know, that's the thing. I know Clarkson's over there. I know they got some guys over there. But, you know, the Clippers can match firepower with firepower, too. And you know what?
Yeah.
I think the Clippers' mentality is very simple. You know, we're just going to, you know, shoot all our bullets and we'll throw the gun out.
Thing is, Tyronn Lue's got something that Quinn Snyder, the head coach of the Utah Jazz, doesn't have. Tyronn Lue has been a champion. He's been to the finals.
Yeah.
He's been through the hellfire. He's not a heartbreak coach. I mean, Quinn Snyder, if Utah goes down the series, guess what? Quinn Snyder joins the heartbreak coaching ranks. It'll be his fifth playoff loss there. So, in a sense, Tyronn Lue, he knows how to go. He's been through the hellfire. He knows
right.
how to deal with that pressure. The thing is, I think if the Clippers take Utah, then, there's no stopping them. I think that they'll all the way to the finals there, at least to the finals, if not the actual title itself, in my view. Shall we talk about the NHL now?
I just want to get a couple of Barry from Peoria, Illinois, listening to the show. This guy's a huge Mets fan. He said, "Go Mets," even though this is a purgatory of Pennsylvania. And then we have Sue from Kirkland, Washington. Gosh darn it, guys! I thought Julio Jones was coming to the Seattle Seahawks.
Nah, ain't gonna happen. But getting back to the NHL right now. Montreal has got a lead in the second period. They got a 1-0 lead over Winnipeg.
Wow.
And Carey Price, man, he's stoning them, man. And right now, if Montreal goes all the way to the finals, he's my candidate for the Conn Smythe Trophy. I mean, Carey Price is really stepping up there. I mean, he's already got one shot out
something.
Against the Winnipeg Jets.
If you had Carey Price in Philly and I had Carey Price in Pittsburgh, we'd win the Cup every year.
Yeah, I mean, that was such a shocker that Pittsburgh went down. But you got to hand it to the Islanders. They're young Turks. You know, they got great management, and Lou Lamoriello is general manager, one of the all-time greats, and you know, Barry Trotz, you know, as head coach there. And Barry Trotz knows how to coach young players, get the best out of them. And they're hanging tough with the Bruins there. To my mind, Colorado's got that 2-1 lead over Vegas, and I'll tell you, tonight, they play later tonight. The game starts at 8:30 p.m. Vegas not only has to win tonight, what they have to do is they got to win Game 5 at Colorado. If they're going to take this series, they've got to nip them in 6. They must not let this series go the full 7, because if it goes the full 7, Colorado will win. I'm calling this. If Vegas wins tonight, then whoever wins Game 5 will win the series. That's my call. I mean, provided that Vegas wins tonight. Now, if they lose tonight, I think Colorado wins it all.
Right. And then what you can have here is, and I'll roll the chances any day you want, we could have a Colorado-Montreal final before we get to the Stanley Cup. And I'll tell you right now, I'll take my chances with Montreal. I don't care how much speed Colorado has with McKinnon and all those guys. that goaltending there in Montreal will stone them. I saw it last year. They were 12th seed. They took my 5th seeded Penguins out, and you saw what they did with Toronto. Toronto went away. It's 4 straight years they've lost game 7s, and look what they're doing to Winnipeg, man. Amazing what they're doing to Winnipeg. So I'm telling you right now, even if Colorado wins that, good luck trying to get past Montreal because a hot goaltender, we saw this in 1993, Patrick Waugh shut down Wayne Gretzky and the LA Kings. So I'll take my chances. And I'm telling you, when Montreal, both of them have seen Montreal through the years, Dryden and all of it. I mean, they just seem to stonewall you. The Bruins just couldn't seem to get past the Canadiens.
Yeah, I mean, 50 years, ladies and gentlemen, 50 years ago, this year is the 50th anniversary when Ken Dryden made his impressive debut when he led the Canadiens to the 1971 Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean, in the series against the Boston Bruins, who were favored to win the cup that year. This was the semifinal now, not the final, the semifinals. Right. They were able to come from behind in that series and beat the Boston Bruins with Orr, Esposito, Sanderson, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, against all odds. I mean, no one thought the Canadiens would do it in 71. And here it is, another weak Canadiens team, the weakest team of all the playoff teams, you know, going in of all the 16 playoff teams, they had the worst record. And here they are. They come from behind to beat Toronto, which was amazing in my view, because I thought Toronto was going to take it. But when Toronto lost that game 6, I knew they were going to choke it in game 7. I knew, you know. Now Winnipeg, did you see that hit by that Winnipeg Jet sheep?
Oh, yeah, I saw it. That changed.
I mean, you thought that was going to intimidate the Habs? Wrong. It just lit a fire in them, and I think that really, really, really ignited the Canadiens, and they're playing 3 times as hard now. So instead of intimidation, didn't take the steam out of them. Actually, it rekindled the fires, and I think now their anger is really propelling them. And if they take this game tonight against Winnipeg, then, yeah, it'll be a sweep and all that, which is a shock because I thought Winnipeg would be better. But, no. I mean, just – I think Montreal, they've got – emotionally, I want them to win emotionally. I would like to see the curse of Marty McSorley go down in ashes for all time here. I mean, right now you got Tampa 3-1 over Carolina, and I believe tomorrow night they'll take on – the Panthers and all that. I think it would be amazing, a Montreal-Tampa Bay final. I mean, I've got a friend out there, his name is Mike Appel, who's really, his dream is a Tampa Bay-Colorado Stanley Cup final and all that. And you've got 2 teams with massive firepower, but what I think it would be an incredible upset if the Habs able to beat the Lightning in the Eastern Conference Finals.
I'm hoping a Montreal-Boston.
Yeah, well,
Montreal-Boston would be epic.
Yeah, I mean, right now they're toe-to-toe. The thing is, Boston is getting old. I mean, they're like the Penguins. They're an aging team and all that. Kind of in transition. And the Islanders, they're young Turks growing into their uniforms, and they got their whole future ahead of them. So I think in the end, I'm going with the Islanders in that series there. But they would have to take on, you know, the winner of the Colorado Vegas series. And right now, I've been very disappointed with Vegas. First, they allowed Minnesota to extend them, and then I thought they would do better. I thought their defense would hold off.
I thought Carolina would show more heart, and you know, they're in a struggle with Tampa.
Yeah, but I think Carolina, they're still like a year or so away there. I'm not exactly as sanguine on them as I am with the Islanders there. Even Colorado's way ahead of Carolina in its development curve. In many ways, Colorado is going ahead of schedule here. I thought they were a year away, but Grubauer, their goalie, he is really playing over his head, and he is really – I think he's the difference in this series. And I think if they take Vegas – it's going to be very tough for the Islanders. I just don't think the Islanders have enough defense to contain the Colorado Avalanche. So I think, you can see Colorado take the Western Conference.
Well, only that, I think what's going to happen here is, we're up against the time here, but real fast, I think with the Penguins, their whole idea is to keep the team intact, maybe get some toughness out there. Where's Tiger Williams when you need him? But that's what the Penguins will go after. And probably if they can get an experienced goalie, maybe try to go after John Gibson out here in Anaheim. He's a Pittsburgh boy. If they can work a deal to get John Gibson in Pittsburgh, he's good for 50 games. Don't give him any more than 50 games. He gets worn out. If you keep him within the 50-game mark, I think John Gibson would be good in Pittsburgh. Even a Jonathan Quick, the Kings, you know, and he was rumored to go to Philly. I think, you know, when you look at some of these teams, these two goalies out here could help those guys, especially Gibson. I think Jerry had a good year, but he showed his age in the playoffs, and, you know, you need an experienced goaltender down the stretch. And, you know, 109 regular season wins in his career ain't going to cut it. You need somebody better than that. So I look for the Penguins to go out and get an experienced goaltender, add some toughness to support, you know, the Gensels, Crosbys, and Malkins, and, you know, spell Letang back there, too.
Yeah. Let's talk a little about Major League Baseball. The Phillies got a big win today. They beat the Nats 12-6, so that kind of helps them. They stopped their slide a little bit. I mean, it helps in the interdivisional struggle there because it puts, you know, it gets them a little bit closer with the Mets. I mean, the Phillies are still 7 games behind the Mets in the loss column there. You know, a 3.5 overall, but still 7 behind the loss column. The Mets still, you know, they're still doing good. I mean, they had a loss the other day, you know, but they won 7 of the last 10. They're hanging tough because they're the only team in the NL East above 500 there. But I think as the summer goes on, the question is they still got a lot of those unplayed games that they lost out with the Nats due to COVID-19. So the sooner or later, they got to play a lot of doubleheaders. And the question is, do the Mets have the pitching depth to win those doubleheaders and maintain their lead? Or will they wilt, you know, when as it gets hotter, you know, in the summer and all of that? But, I mean, when these with the Phillies, I mean, they've been battling injuries. I mean, Harper's been hurt there. And their lack of pitching depth, I think, has really been telling against them. But at least they stopped the slide for a temporary basis, but what they got
to
get it within 5 games in that loss column, though. They got to make up that deficit.
Yeah,
that's what they
Jacob
have to do.
Jacob DeGrom, I saw him a few years ago out here in L.A. This dude, man, is unbelievable. 0.62 ERA, fanned 11 Padres yesterday. Jacob DeGrom is I haven't seen a pitcher in a decade dominate like this in quite a while. I mean, we saw the Nolan Ryans. We saw guys like that, the Randy Johnsons. But Jacob DeGrom is far and above, has set the bar. He's another one of those Bradys and, you know, LeBron James type of guys where they just set the bar. I mean, he's just unorthodox delivery. I mean, it's really weird. But he gets the job done. I'm not sold on the Mets. I'm not buying stock in the Mets. But I will buy stock when he pitches. He is lights out because I can't take the Mets serious. I haven't taken this team serious since they last got to the World Series with one of the favorites I liked was Terry Collins. Before that, you had to go back to 1986 when they won the thing. I'm not sold. This is a team that just, you know, put together by bits and pieces, make bad trades. Yeah, they got Michael Conforto. I like him. Jury's still out on Pete Alonso. I got to see more of him. But I said from the get-go, I still like Washington and Philly to battle this division out in the grueling months of the summer and down the stretch in September.
The thing is, though, Nats giving up too many runs, man. I mean, their run differential is minus 31. That's the worst one in the whole NL East. I don't know. I think what the Phillies have to hope to do is that the Mets slump out, get close to, drop down to the 500 level, and the Phillies have to get up to the 500 level. If they can just get within striking distance, get hot, you know, in August and September, then maybe they got a shot. But I don't know. Right now, Philadelphia's just a little too weak to win on the wild card. Let's talk about Pittsburgh, because what's with Pittsburgh, Mark? I mean, what's your sense of the Pirates, man?
Well, I think the Pirates, you know, they had a little fish fry this weekend. I thought they could sweep them completely out of town. They took 3 out of 4. They lost today. They're resilient. They're young. Brian Hayes is back in the mix. He's a young budding star up there with, like, Valero Jr. and, you know, Bichette and Tatis and all these other guys. So I like the makeup of the Pirates. The Dodgers come to town now starting Tuesday, 3 games. If you can take 2 out of 3 with the reeling Dodgers who are trying to find themselves, then you go to Milwaukee and Washington after that. I like the Pirates' chances. I know your Phillies are out here next week starting, I believe, Monday where it's going to be 100% capacity at Dodger Stadium. Philly's got a nice little road trip. They go L.A. and San Francisco, so that's going to tell us a lot about how far the Phillies can, you know, start moving up the standings.
But then they got to take, or after the West Coast thing, though, I think they take on Miami later in the month. And again, that's another important thing. They got to win those interdivisional games. They got to move on up in the standings there. You know, get their noses above 500. At least get within striking distance of the Mets, and then hopefully the Mets will slump at the right time. I mean, right now they're in a duel with Atlanta. You know, in terms of second place there. I mean, they're just one game behind them in the loss column there, but. The Phillies, right now, they're not there. They're not within striking distance, and they got to get back above 500 again. They got to string some wins together, get their confidence back, and they got to get healthy.
Well, I'll tell you
too.
One thing: it's going to be a lot to talk about next week, and also we'll be previewing next week, July 4th. Everybody wants to talk about these retro ballparks. Any final thoughts, and how can people get a hold of you, my friend?
Yeah, my show, The Package Tourist, tapes every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and is posted online at the Anchor Network by Spotify after 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be a great show. And, Mark, it's great being back with you, man.
I love it, man.
Yeah.
I missed you for the 2 weeks. You know, but it's nice to be back and nice to get the show going. I know everybody they couldn't wait to hear it, and boy, it's simply amazing to do these shows with you each and every week. Hey, guys, we're out of time. For Matthew DiBiase, yours truly, Mark Mancini, signing out. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms powered by Mancini Media. Tune in next week, same time, same channel. Have a blessed week, everybody.
Take care, everyone.